Hi, he's Frank Sinatra.
Hi, he's Dean Martin.
Hi, turn the card.
We're the Commodores.
And I'm William King.
I'm Lionel Richie.
I'm Thomas McClary.
I'm Marlon Williams.
I'm Walter Clyde.
And I'm Ron LaPre.
Season's greetings from all of us here at Saturday Night Live.
I'm Ed Sheeran.
And I'm Elton John.
This is Leanne Rimes, and you're listening to The Sounds of Christmas.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. This is our 200th episode, and I wanted to do something special to celebrate. After all, 200 episodes is kind of a big deal. At least, I think it is. As you probably know, there are lots of podcasts out there covering lots of different topics, and only a small percentage of that has anything to do with Christmas. And an even smaller percentage of those actually make it to 200 episodes. That's not something that only happens to Christmas podcasts. For every podcast that makes it to 200, there are probably dozens that barely make it to 5. And I'm not dissing those guys. I think it's just that it's relatively easy to start a podcast, but it takes a lot of work to keep it going. And I didn't want to say all that to blow my own horn how much of a genius I am. I wanted to invite some other Christmas podcast hosts on that have also joined the 200 episode club to talk about their journey. So I'd like to welcome Brian from the Christmas Past podcast and Jerry D from the Totally Rad Christmas podcast. Thank you both for giving some time and joining me.
Sure. Thanks for inviting us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Brian, let's start with you. How did you decide to start a podcast?
Well, it wasn't that I wanted to start a podcast per se. It was back in 2015, I was listening to a lot of NPR-style podcasts like Freakonomics and Planet Money and Radiolab, things like that. And around Christmas time, I said, oh, I wonder if there is something like that, but for Christmas, like NPR does Christmas. And there actually is an NPR Christmas podcast, but it's not like what you think it would be. What I was looking for is, you know, these kind of nerdy deep dives where you could take a topic that sounds fairly, you know, familiar to you, but still find little hidden things you wouldn't have thought of before. And, you know, there's this style of storytelling that has a lot of curiosity and fascination behind it. And of course, when I went looking for that podcast in 2015, it didn't exist. And as a matter of fact, there were only like three other Christmas podcasts at all at the time. There was The Christmas Stocking with Lee Cameron. There was some church that put out its sermons, its Christmas sermons in podcast form. And there were a couple of music ones, like a Celtic Christmas music, but the landscape was pretty bare. And so I said, well, I suppose I will try to create that podcast myself and see what happens. And, you know, I had no business doing any of this because, again, I was going for this like NPR style thing. I don't have any audio production experience. I'm not a reporter of any kind. But I knew exactly what I wanted this thing to look and, well, not look, but, you know, sound like and feel like to listen to. And so I figured I'd give it a go. And I'm sure you guys have the same experience that I do. When you have a Christmas podcast, even if you have people listening all year round, there's no getting around the fact that most of your interest is the 6 weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Mm-hmm. And it makes it really hard to build an audience because you have a very narrow window of opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, here we are. I'm entering my 9th season this year. Wow. Yeah, and it's
amazing.
It's been a crazy, crazy thing. I really, the first season I put out episodes, I figured if anyone outside of my friends and family listened, that would be a win. But here I am, still going.
And you were on TV too. Like you had some appearances because of your podcast and your knowledge about Christmas. That's cool.
That has been probably the biggest surprise is how many doors that this thing opened that I never thought that it would. Because, you know, again, like I just figured I'd put it out at Christmas time and maybe I'd get some people listening to it. But around season three, people would reach out to me and say, oh, I'm, you know, I'm doing a story about the, you know, for my newspaper or this, you know, can we quote you? And then I got to a certain point where, you know, I was attracting interest from publishers. And so I had a book come out in, losing track of time now, what was it, 2022?
Sounds
and
right.
And another one that is coming out in 2025. There's actually going to be three books in total. And then last year, out of nowhere, it was June, someone from the History Channel reached out and they said, oh, we're doing an episode of The Toys That Built America about Santa Claus. Can we fly you out to New York? The whole thing happened in 3 days, like from the first email to like the flying back and forth to do the interview.
Amazing.
And I still haven't seen it, by the way. I haven't DVR'd or TiVo'd or whatever the term is. Have not watched the episode yet.
That's amazing.
Wow. That's not the typical start to a podcast. Not that I'm a podcast expert, hardly, but that's just, that's amazing. How much work would you guesstimate you put into an episode?
More than I should, because over the years, I've tried to make the process more efficient. I mean, at first, I had no idea what I was doing. And there are certain phases to the process, because mine, it's not like this kind of podcast where, you know, people come on, you talk for about an hour, and like, that's the episode. With me, it's there, you know, there's a script, there's a lot of editing, there's a bit of sound design. And so even the process of finding the right person to talk to can take a while, just a lot of back and forth and booking and all that. And then after the interview, you have to go back and figure out where the quotes are. Then you have to write the story around it and then do additional research and then find the right music and then wait for someone to send me a Christmas memory. I mean, I would say in all of these, you know, the end products are like 10 or 15 minute episodes. But I would say for each of them, there's about 20 hours worth of work that goes into it.
Wow. Yeah, I remember your first episode, which I think was in two or three parts, about the myth, the legend of the everything of Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to listen to, but as a former radio guy and as another podcast host, I'm listening to this and I'm like, okay, this is not something he just decided today. Hey, I'm going to knock this out. This is something that took some time.
Mm-hmm. You should have heard my first takes on the first one I ever recorded, not the first one that I released, was about sugar plums. And, you know, again, like I was trying to figure out the voice and tone. I was listening to a lot of these NPR things and I was doing a lot of experimenting, like getting close to the mic and talking like that, you know, that kind of stuff. and so, as I gave the episode to my wife, I'm like, here, I want you to listen to this and give me your feedback. She couldn't even get all the way through it. She said, it sounded like you're delivering like a eulogy for sugar plums. Like, she's like, you know, I get what you're trying to do, but it doesn't sound Christmassy. That's the missing piece. It has to feel Christmassy. And so, yeah, I went back to the drawing board.
Jerry, how did you get started? What made decide to do a podcast?
So it was, So I had been listening to only two podcasts. The very first one was How Did This Get Made with Paul Scheer and those guys. Some of my favorite comedians, so I thought I'd listen in, and they talk about bad movies, and I thought, oh, that's fun. So I was listening to that, and one day I thought, I wonder if there's a Christmas one, and so I happened upon Tis a Podcast, and I listened to them for about a year, and commented every once in a while on their Reddit or Facebook or some of their message boards, and they don't really like Rankin Bass that much, except for one of them, and I grew up loving Rankin Bass. I mean, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. They're my favorites. If I miss them every Christmas, it doesn't feel like Christmas. So I would be very vocal sometimes with some of the trivia that I knew about it, because I was also friends with Rick Goldschmidt, the official biographer of Rankin Bass, or historian, if you will. So anyway, I decided one day, I knew they had a Patreon, and if you paid a certain level that you could get on a show. So I paid just so I could get on that one show, and we covered Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July, dropped a little bit of knowledge and made some jokes. And then the next day I got an email from Todd Killian of Christmas Clatter, who said, that was fun, you should have your own show. And so I kind of laughed it off. And but in the back of my mind, I thought that would be fun to have my own show. And I just kind of sat on it for a long time until COVID hit. So it was about 6 or 7 months of me just like thinking, well, maybe I'll have a show, maybe I won't. But I actually did. As I was driving home one day from work, I pulled over into a library, just a public library, because the theme song popped in my head. I had it ready to go. I pulled my phone out and I just started singing. I wrote some words and the music, and I had a theme song. I didn't know what my show was going to be about, but I had a theme song. And so I thought, you know what, maybe I should do this. And then COVID hit like a couple of months later, and it was a perfect time because we were all locked down or sheltering in place or whatever you want to call it. And we weren't going anywhere. So I ordered a microphone and kind of started it off. And my first, besides to the podcast, which was like my first official appearance, but my second appearance was on Brian's show, where I was terrible at Two Truths and a Lie. at the time, I hadn't even started off. I hadn't even created a Facebook page for my show. Nothing. I literally knew that my first episode was about to drop, and that's about it. So I struggled through it as well. But luckily, whenever I had a question, I asked Todd Killian, who actually told me that whenever he had a question, he asked you, Brian, and you helped him out getting started. So in a way, you're kind of my like grand podcast mentor. If he was my podcast mentor, you're my grand podcast mentor. So
I was hearing from a lot of podcasters around COVID. There's that other guy. Is it Scott who has the one about the Japanese Christmas?
Oh, Scott Leopold.
And a few others too. That it was just a very fertile time for people starting podcasts.
It really was. Like Art Kilmer started his Cozy Christmas during that time as well. And because we were all, I mean, we had nothing to do. We all needed some kind of joy in our lives, and we all love Christmas. So why not? But yeah, so I started getting guests, and because the show that I listened to most was How Did This Get Made, I decided I wanted to be more conversational, and I wanted to include clips early on, but I didn't, just because I wasn't super familiar with Audacity. I knew Pro Tools, but Pro Tools was expensive and I didn't have it. Mm-hmm. So I just used the free Audacity. And as I've experimented with it, I started including more clips and jokes and sound bites and things like that. But at the time, it was like, all right, we're just going to talk about this topic. It's G.I. Joe. There's had a Christmas episode. Let's go. And I came up with my bits eventually that I usually do at the end that are kind of ridiculous. And, you know, I knew the name of the bit before I knew what the bit was going to be about. So gag me with the spoon was a very popular phrase. So I said, I got to have a bit called gag me with the spoon. And I don't know what it's going to be, but we're going to throw it in there. So eventually I streamlined it. I have a set intro. I have a set outro. I have my bits that I always include. And it's pretty straightforward now. And like you, it does take quite a bit of time to put it together, but not 20 hours. So that's very impressive. And I wish, I mean, that's why yours sounds so amazing and mine is just okay. But
I think yours sounds great too.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. But
Brian, I had to count through to find episode 200 of yours, and I was surprised, kind of surprised, that you didn't make a big deal about it. You didn't really say anything. It was just one more episode. I believe it was last year, the Christmas Memories episode. I think it was around the first week in December. I don't know if you noticed or if you even cared.
No, I honestly was not even paying attention. When episode 100 came out, I kind of made a big deal, and I did what I think something like this, what a lot of podcasters tend to do. They'll invite people who've been on their show before, or just people they've been meaning to get on the show, and like, oh, hey, let's all come on and do a thing, or maybe you can record a message that I can put on, or something like that. When episode 200 came out, I honestly it was only after I think like whatever I'm up to now, like 210, 215, like I haven't checked, that I looked back and said, oh, like, you know, son of a gun, I have more than 200 episodes. I think what the first time I noticed it, because I changed hosts, I was no longer satisfied with my old podcast host and I switched to a new one. And I was migrating all my stuff over and it showed me the list of episodes. And I said, oh, okay, well, I guess that's how many I have. I wasn't keeping track.
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention. And I noticed, I think about a month and a half ago, as I started planning out some Christmas in July stuff, and I sent the episode up to my host and saw, oh, that's number 195. Huh. So, and I already knew, well, I know what the next two episodes are going to be, but it seems like it should be something that matters on the 200th. And I'm like, but it's going to be August and this is a Christmas podcast.
Right.
So I was just, and I started looking, and that's when I noticed that there aren't a lot of Christmas related podcasts that have made it to 200. And I don't want it to sound like those guys are losers because they couldn't, because that's not the case at all. It does, you know, as both of you guys have said, it takes a lot of work. And when you see how many podcasts are out there and really how easy it is, you buy a microphone, you pay Buzzsprout or Podbean or somebody, and boom, there you go. Mm-hmm. Talk into the mic, post it out there. It goes out to iTunes and all kinds of places, and you have a podcast. Great. Mm-hmm. Now, what do I do for episode two? And it can get to that. Jerry, I know you started with the Treasury.
Yes.
And then you revisited that on episode 200 with Anthony from Tis the Podcast. And you did happen to mention that this was the big 200th episode.
Yeah. So, I can't believe I'm at more than 200, but it's all because of a crazy accident from season one. So at the time, I wasn't really planning ahead as far as like numbers go. I just knew that I had to record because I work at a Christmas store. So I had to record a ton of content in August, September, and October so that in my busiest season, which is late October all the way through December, I wouldn't have to record as much. But I recorded all these, pre-recorded them, and people would ask when they would drop. And I just had a canned response that I was saying just, oh, in about 3 weeks. And then I realized, well, I can't release them all in 3 weeks. So I guess I'll just release one, maybe two a week in October and maybe three a week in December. I don't know. And so I've a lot more scheduled now. But at the time, you know, being so green, I hadn't thought of it. But I did make a big deal out of it, but only because I'd heard other podcasters make big deals out of it. So I thought, well, 200, that's amazing. And I, like you said, I brought it back. I started my first full length episode was on the Time Life Treasury of Christmas from 1986. And so I brought it back. We took that playlist and we just used 80s versions of the songs only. So instead of Bing Crosby singing White Christmas, we went with like Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers singing White Christmas and, you know, things like that, where we just recreated the playlist or the track list, but with 80s versions. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And it was different, I guess. I don't know. But I know 200 seemed like a big deal, so I thought I'd try.
When I hit 100, I noticed it when I was uploading the episode. So I'd already recorded it, wasn't paying attention, uploaded the episode and went, oh, that's number 100. Okay. Oh, well, moving on. And then there was the same right. thing at 150. Actually, with 150, I noticed it when I loaded up episode 152.
Oh, right.
Now, does the 200, does that, because I know, Jerry, I know you do some bonus episodes. Do those right. count in the...
They don't count in my official count, no. So those are both. So technically I've released like 330 or 331 episodes. But yeah, I don't count any Halloween related episodes, any Thanksgiving or Easter related episodes. If I cover something outside of my window from 77 to 93 that I just wanted to talk about, I don't count those as well. So officially I'm at like 268, I think, something like that. But if you include all bonus episodes, it's like 331. Yeah.
And you already have, not to ruin the magic for anybody, but you already have a bunch of stuff planned for this year, for the rest of this year.
I do. Yes. Yeah. It's a lot of it is recorded. I'm much more with it. Like I said, I learned over the years, especially after that first year. But I also set up a dangerous precedent that first year where now I feel like I have to release two episodes a week in October and November and three in December. And then once I get to December 17th, because that's when the start of the O Antiphons is for those that that might know, I go one a day until Christmas. And so, yeah. So there's a lot of episodes that I have to do. And so I've just pre-recorded a ton and they're all set up, but I won't quite reach 300 till after Christmas. Unfortunately, I was really trying
officially.
And I thought, no, forget it.
You've made it to 200 episodes from 2020 to, I think last year was 200.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Whereas Brian, you started in 2016 and you hit 200 last year.
Yeah, because for a long time, I was putting out episodes between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And It generally worked out to about 3 a week. I wasn't planning it that way, but that, you know, is how the math mathed. These last couple seasons were actually in the, you know, I forget what the math is like on how the shortest a Christmas season can be and the longest it can be, but we're in a little run where the Christmas seasons are going to be relatively shorter. So putting out, I guess it'll all told be about 11 to 12 episodes per year. But then what happened was people started reaching out to me saying, oh, like, more, please. And I just could not do those kinds of episodes where I do 20 hours worth of work and writing and all of that. I said, well, what else could I do? And so leading up to Christmas, I started doing things like, you know, where I would have people on and we would play like a trivia game. There were times where I would narrate Christmas fiction that's just been sort of lost to time. So just like classic Christmas fiction, which is kind of fun, but it's just a different thing, right? There's the core episodes that I do, and then there are just things that I've done to keep people engaged because they've asked for it. I've also done a live show. I've done other things like that as well. But yeah, if we're counting just core episodes, then I probably am not even close to 200. But again, it's not the number I track, right? I'm thinking about like downloads. Is my audience growing? And at this point, it's more like just experiences and connections. I mean, that's like kind of what keeps me going now, is just all the connections I've had with people. These, like, some have been just really warm and nice. Some have been a little gut-wrenching. And it's just like, you know, it's just things that just wouldn't have happened if I didn't start the podcast. And that's really what keeps me going. I never would have thought I'd have a book deal. Never would have thought I'd be on TV. And you know, who knows what next year will bring or the year after that. But at the end of the day, it's really, you know, I started the podcast because I was looking for something that didn't exist. And I said, I can't be the only one who's interested in this. And then number two, it was just sort of a creative outlet for my Christmas spirit that I could kind of engage in throughout the year. It doesn't take me all year to put together all of my episodes, but I kind of let it, you know, so I could have something Christmassy to do all year. But yeah, I mean, the truth is, I think that's about what I'm good for, is, you know, a dozen-ish so of those kinds of episodes where I tell the backstory behind a Christmas tradition. And if I'm honest about it, I don't want to rush that, because sooner or later you cover all the major ones and then, you know, you kind of have to start scraping the bottom of the barrel. And I'm not eager to get to that point.
Do you have most of the rest of this year planned out?
Oh yeah. I'm actually just about done with the writing for all of my core episodes. And then it'll be the recording and the mixing and all that that I'll do. I like to try to have all that stuff done by Halloween, so that during the Christmas season, I'm just celebrating Christmas, not, you know, running a podcast.
I have told myself that I was going to do that. This will be the fourth year that I have said, okay, I'm going to get it all done. I'm going to work, get all the interviews, everything done and edited and ready to go. And then I can enjoy Christmas. And then I just hear the universe go, ha, 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 ha.
Right. Best laid plans and whatnot.
Brian, the 200 plus episodes that you've done, are there some that sort of stand out to you that you're either most proud of or that you just really like? I know it's like, which is your favorite child, but
I'm not really sure if there's one, not necessarily like I'm happiest with the finished product, that maybe more like I had the most fun making. And the one that comes to mind is the one about candy canes, which is a fairly standard example of my episode. But the reason that it was fun was because, you know, my thing is I try really hard to find just the absolute most qualified person to interview. For, you know, it's just a standard that I set for myself. And so over the years, I mean, I've talked to like museum curators and CEOs of companies and, you know, professional dancers and linguists and like historians and biblical scholars. You know, I've had some of the most interesting conversations of my adult life have been in the course of doing this podcast. But the one about candy canes was funny because there was someone who worked for a candy cane factory who said, okay, I will do an interview, but you have to call me at like this number at this certain time. And I was starting to get the sense that there was something fishy about this. and so I called at the right time. They said, okay, you have to call me back on this other line, the secret line, call me back in 5 minutes. And if anyone else answers. And at this point I knew like, this is someone, I don't know who this person is, but it's probably not someone that I need to be interviewing, but I've gone this far, right? Like I got to figure out what this guy is all about. And it turns out that he was someone who worked at the candy cane factory who had been going around telling everybody, you know, that story about how the candy cane is really, if you turn it upside down, it's a J for Jesus. And like the red is the blood and all of that kind of stuff. And it's like, he was, I guess, you know, I don't know. He really wanted to tell that story. And he was sort of posing as someone who was speaking on behalf of the company. And so anyway, it was just this bizarre, you know, I've had a lot of fun doing interviews, but then I've also had like some bizarre interactions like that one. Anyway, eventually someone from Spangler Candy Canes, the CEO, actually agreed to talk to me. So I talked to him too. And I was so tempted to put that whole little adventure in the episode somehow, like that I was hot on the trail of the story of candy canes and like was led astray. But I didn't have the energy for it.
Jerry, any particular episodes that sort of stand out like that?
Yeah, I mean, I love the Raddies whenever I can do them. So that's the fake award show that I do every year. And it takes a lot of time. So just cutting all the sound clips, because it's really my excuse to do a clip show. So cutting all the sound clips takes about just 3 to 7 days, depending on the intensity of the clips and you know, how long I want them to be. But then mixing it all in, adding the sound effects, adding the music, adding all the transitions, that takes about another 3.5 to 4 days. And because I do it in April when we're on our 6-week break from work, I mean like literal days. I don't mean like just spending a couple hours. I mean, I start as soon as I drop the kids off at school, like when I get home, all the way until about 5 p.m. when they return. So it's long and intense, but it's always fun. So the first year was simpler. We had a bit where one of the guys just could never win an award, even when he clearly was the one that had been on the show the most. He couldn't win the award for most appearances. The second year I did a fake like a mail away episode bit where Mike Westfall was on these fake episodes. And I even brought Mike in and we recorded some fake episodes, like 7 minutes each, that I would cut clips for these various things. And then the third year I got a little more intense. We did a Back to the Future 2 theme. Fourth year we did Gremlins just this past year. So they've just been fun adventures that, you know, you start writing scripts and get people getting involved. And it's like, I don't know, it's very 1930s radio, but It's fun. And I love doing them. So those are probably the most memorable. And then just anytime I get to talk with some of my close friends is always a blast as well.
Is there a milestone or anything like that that's on the horizon for you that you're thinking about as far as the podcast goes?
Ooh, I mean, episode 300 is coming up soon. So probably in the next few, like I said, right after Christmas, episode 300 should be hitting. So I'm trying to get in touch with Weird Al Yankovic, and we've had some conversations because his Christmas at Ground Zero was released in the 80s. So I want to interview him about that. And so talking with his management at the time, but nothing besides that, nothing really else except my usual. I just want to have a good time with friends. And if I can make someone, as I'm talking about all the toys that I used to love, or, you know, what I used to listen to on the radio or what I used to watch, if I can make someone remember when they watched it as a kid and they thought about Christmas and how great it felt, then, you know, that's a win for me. So
Brian, how about you? Any sort of milestone or anything big that you're looking towards?
It'll be next year. So my next book is finished. The publisher has accepted the manuscript. We're working on the illustrations now. And it is set to come out in 2025. Fingers crossed. I think publishing, the last one, there was almost some delays, and I think those were COVID related. Most books that you buy are printed in China, and it's just a whole thing of like getting it printed and shipped over. So anyway, that's what I'm looking forward to most. And when that comes out, that will be the 10th season. And then if it's anything like the last book, you know, the publisher assigned me a publicist. And so I was able to actually have some pretty cool experiences, get on some quote unquote name brand podcasts. The book was picked up in some pretty, like, surprisingly, is in the Saturday Evening Post, Time Magazine, People Magazine, Newsweek. That kind of stuff is fun. It's, but it's, again, like the seasonality of it all, it was, it's this big mad rush, and then January comes, it's like, now what? No, I've got nothing to do.
So
I don't know if you have the same experience, but both of you, like when the season's over, it feels like a small loss of sorts.
Oh yeah. And it's funny because in just like October, November, December, you see your numbers rising like crazy.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, that is ridiculously high. And then January, they start to drop. And by February, it's like just a plunge, at least for me. I don't know about for y'all, but you're right. It really is like the shortest amount of time that you can manage to cram all your listeners in.
Yeah. I do happen to know, if it's any consolation to either of you, because especially for podcasts that put out multiple episodes a week, when people subscribe, you know, they're downloading the episodes, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're listening to them in real time.
Right.
So I hear a lot of people say, oh, I'm going to save this until I'll listen to it in March, because that's when my birthday, or, you know, I hear people say stuff like that all the time. So, you know, the numbers, they're hard to track because they don't quite tell the whole story. You don't know if people listen to the episode, if they listen all the way to the end of the episode, if they're sharing it. It's a tough game, right? It's not like YouTubing where you can really easily share media and you can tell who's sharing it, and you can tell, you have those metrics about who's listening to it. It's you just kind of put stuff out there and you have just a couple of ways to know if it's landing, you know.
Right.
The thing about YouTube, I'm late to YouTube. I just put all the episodes onto YouTube with a static image 6-8 weeks ago maybe, and I'll go in there and I'll see that, oh, somebody listened to this for 9% of the episode.
Like, right.
Why? Why did they? What did I? And then you're, what did I do? What did I say that made them go, you know what? 2 minutes is enough of this. I got 2 minutes. I barely got into anything. I got past the intro. Is that it? Is the intro too? And you start second guessing so much stuff. And then it's crazy. But it's hard. YouTube is the only place where you can really get that kind of information, because as a podcaster, you get all this download information, but there are so many different places that your podcast could be that it's tough to get listens. Who's really listening? Because everybody doesn't subscribe. Maybe they go and they listen, and maybe they listen for 3 minutes instead of two, but you don't know. And just look at that and you're like, okay. And when I started, I had no idea what are good numbers? What are bad numbers? Is this good? I'm starting a Christmas podcast on the 1st of February. So any numbers would probably be good, but I have no idea. And what I have come to learn is that doesn't matter, because who knows who's really listening. And if they're subscribed, if they're listening, no idea. I started doing this as kind of a tool for my online station, also called The Sounds of Christmas. And so it's different. The station is really the big thing for me, and this is sort of a little side thing. And I started the station because I thought, I love Christmas music and traditional radio is terrible at it. And there's so much good stuff. I want to play a lot of it. And maybe there are other Christmas music weirdos who feel the same as I do. And I was right. There were.
There are.
So I don't know why it took me so many years to then think, maybe there are Christmas music people who would like to listen to conversation about Christmas music. I don't know. Let me put out a couple episodes. And hey, some people were listening in February. So those are my people. Oh,
right.
Brian, without spoiling anything, what do you have coming up that you can talk about or that you want to?
Let's see. This is it's all like a blur. Like right now, I'm working on an episode about Wren Day. So I was actually able to talk to a curator from the National Museum of Ireland about that. It's an Irish tradition. I actually talked to Rick Goldschmidt this year about yeah, good guy.
Yeah, he's cool. He's a good guy.
The thing I'm kind of excited about, it may or may not happen. I've been in touch with the publicist for Gregory Porter, who's a musician I really admire. who put out a really great Christmas album last year. It was kind of like my pick of the season. And so I immediately reached out to his management, and like, he's, you know, even if you're not a jazz fan, you probably have heard his name. He's very big and touring the world and everything. And it was just one of those, like, you know, sure, I send out lots of emails like that, you know, to try to get interviews. But to my surprise, they said, oh, you know, yeah, we might be able to make that happen sometime around the fall. So my fingers are crossed. It probably won't happen, but it might. And that has me excited. So yeah, there's that. So what else is coming up this year? We're doing, jeez, what was I doing? Ivy. I have them all like on a spreadsheet, and they're almost done. And like, as soon as I finish one, I go to the next one, and I kind of forget what else there is for this season. Just how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, very much so.
How often do you do the Christmas memories thing?
Well, I started out with people would send me one, and I put it at the end of one episode. And so that first year, that was all I was reaching out to people I know saying, can you please send me one? I need to have one for every episode. You know, the concern was having enough. And then the next year, the concern was like having enough episodes to accommodate all of the memories. And so that's that first year, the second year rather, I had to put out an episode that was just all like a compilation of Christmas memories. And then as it's gone on, like now I have to put out like two or three of those. So it really depends on how many I get. And I've always thought like, okay, at a certain point, like anyone in my audience who ever wanted to send one already has, and I'm going to start seeing things go down, but it hasn't happened yet. I have a lot of repeat customers, which is nice. There's a couple people who send me one every year.
Nice.
Jerry, what have you got coming up that you won't spoil anything if you tell us?
I try to always have several comic book episodes, several toy episodes, several decoration episodes if I can. But of course, the most common thing available, especially when you're talking about pop culture, is TV shows, specials, and movies. So I have a lot of those. I'm excited just because they're fun. But the one that I'm particularly excited about is Band-Aid 2. So I'll be talking with Alex Rawls about Band-Aid 2, which a lot of people don't realize, you know, there were more than one Band-Aid. And there were some, let's just say, not as well-known artists on Band-Aid 2. So I'm really excited to talk that one. I've got a Disney sing-along album that I want to talk about as well. I recorded on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There was a one-shot Michelangelo comic book from 86, that I record on. So that's going to be dropping soon. And then, of course, I usually do, in October, I do a Halloween episode and then a Christmas episode. So two episodes a week, Halloween, Christmas. And then in Thanksgiving, I do a Thanksgiving episode. And in November, I do a Thanksgiving episode and a Christmas episode. So I got some fun things coming up as well. And it's a tradition now that I cover one of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parades. So we're doing 1989, which is one of my favorites because it had Fred Travellina as the Joker. It's just fun. And I actually really enjoy watching those Thanksgiving parades from the 80s a little bit more than I like the newer ones. The newer ones seem a little too polished. And
yeah,
I don't know. I like the grime and the fuzz a little bit more. But
are you ever concerned that because your show kind of has the parameters of, you know, technically, I guess 1977 and 1993, but mostly the 80s, that you're going to run out of movies?
No, there is ridiculous amounts. So I have a list, and you've seen it, but I have a list just of music released from 1980 to 1989. And that list is, I think, like 13 or 14 pages long.
Wow.
And that's just music. That's not counting comics, that's not counting toys, that's not counting anything else. You know, I talk about fads. I did a whole fashion episode. So there's literally, I could do this for at least another 20 years, if not longer. Will I? I don't know. We'll see about that. We'll see if my wife puts up with me for that long doing it. But there's still so much that I've barely touched. Season three, I went a little bit more obscure. And so for this season, in season five, I'm bringing it back to things like the Smurfs and the Glow Friends and the raccoons and growing pains, things that people really know and feel a lot stronger for. So I can mix in popular with obscure for decades, really, with just how much is out there. You wouldn't believe it. Most stuff hasn't even been touched yet. And it's amazing how much content was actually produced. If you look at the music alone, I still every day, like there was a 1989 movie, Dial Code Santa Claus. It was a French film that Home Alone was actually accused of ripping off. But Bonnie Tyler sings a Christmas song for it called Merry Christmas. And she released that. And it was a B-side called Funky Christmas. So she released that single for this movie that I'd never heard of until, you know, a few months ago. And the song itself is great. But, you know, just things like that that surprise me constantly. So I'm actually going to do an episode on Christmas coloring books soon. So that's exciting, too.
It amazes me at times that, and I was an avid Christmas music fan in the 80s, that I will still come across things that I didn't know about. You and I, before we started this episode, were talking about, and I don't want to give it away, but we were talking about a fairly well-known actress who had sung for Disney in the early 80s, and I had no idea. And it was just about a year or two ago that I came across a Christmas album by the Starland Vocal Band, who had the giant 70s hit Afternoon Delight. I had no idea they did one. It was like the last thing they did. And there's probably a reason that no one knows that they did that. But I'm just amazed that that kind of stuff still happens. Well, how does everybody find your podcast, Jerry?
Oh, you can go to totallyradchristmas.com and you can get all the links to my sites there, or linktree.com/totallyradchristmas as well. That'll take you to all the socials. You can all the places that it's hosted. But yeah, just totallyradchristmas.com is the easy way to do it.
Ryan, how does everybody find your podcast?
Probably the easiest way is to just go on your favorite podcast app and look for Christmas Past. I would send you to my website. You're welcome to go there, but there's really not much of interest there. it's just a website. It's just easier to go to Spotify and look me up.
And we've talked about your first book several times, but I don't think we ever actually said what it's called. It is called Christmas Past. And there is a link to that on your website, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes too. Didn't you have a book that just came out recently, or is it just about to come out?
That's the one that's coming out next year. That's one is called Of Christmases Long, Long Ago. And that's it's about Christmas traditions that we don't practice now, but were once really common in, you know, say the Middle Ages or the early Victorian period.
Okay. Well, thank you both for giving up some time and helping me celebrate episode 200. And here's to the next 200. Thank you.
Thanks very much, and congrats on 200.
Congratulations, yeah.
And thank you so much for listening, helping me share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is just about done. All our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page, so you can find us on your favorite streaming site, click on over, and subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. I'll put a link to that down in the show notes too. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episode, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. And if you're listening to this episode on your phone, you can also click the Send Us a Text Message link and connect that way. Thanks again. And may you always believe in Santa Claus.